You know, we all have a lot of data, and it has to positively, absolutely stay safe.
It can't get into the wrong hands, and the biggest challenge we have is how to transfer it from here to there. We all know as leaders that legacy tools that transfer our important files and sensitive data are mostly outdated and fall short on security, especially with the demands of today's remote workforce. Relying on outdated technology puts our organization's brand at risk, and that is unacceptable. So we are excited to invite you to step into the future of completely secured managed file transfer from our friends at Kiteworks. Kiteworks is absolutely, positively the most secure managed file platform on the market today. They've been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. And unlike traditional legacy systems with limited functionality, Kiteworks has unmatched software security with ongoing bounty programs and regular pen testing to minimize vulnerabilities. And the coolest part, they have easy to use one-click appliance updates you will love. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com to get started today. And now, the show. Hi, Cybercrime Junkies. This is your host, David Morrow. And in this episode, we are meeting with public speaker and expert Jay Abbasi on top ways to manage stress and career change from his expert perspective. From leadership roles at Tesla and SolarCity to overcoming a massive personal tragedy, Jay Abbasi has developed a methodology that can help us all address stress, anxiety, imposter syndrome, things like that, especially with career changes. A well-known public speaker and entrepreneur, Jay shares exclusive insight you will love. His methods have helped change the trajectory of thousands of lives across the globe. We hope you enjoy this episode. We learned a great deal from Jay and had a wonderful conversation. And now the show. Lucky to work for a great group of people you really believe in.
Find yourself making an impact.
Technology is a river that flows through every aspect of an organization, and today is different. We put ourselves and our organizations literally at risk of complete destruction every single time we get online. One click, one distraction is all it takes. Hi, Cybercrime Junkies. This is your host, David Morrow, along with co-host Mark Mosher.
Come join us as we explore our research into these blockbuster true crime stories,
along with interviews of leaders who built and protect great brands. Hey, how are you, sir? Nice to see you this afternoon.
Good to see you, David. I'm doing doing well. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So we're going to segue a little bit from the cybersecurity constant topics that we always talk about, because you're doing some remarkable work, and it plays exactly in all of the people that work in the cybersecurity field, right? We're going to go over top ways to manage stress, career change, and really kind of talk about your expert perspective. For those that don't know, Jay Abbasi came from a leadership role at Tesla and then at SolarCity. We're going to get into that in just a little bit. You overcame a really kind of challenging personal tragedy. Then you developed this methodology that really has changed the trajectory of a lot of people's lives. And you are a public speaker and you talk about this all the time. So, Jay, thank you. Welcome to the studio.
I appreciate that. Very kind introduction, David. It's an honor to be chatting with you.
Yeah. So tell us about your time at Tesla. That's the first thing I want to know about. And then tell everybody kind of what's more important, and you know, your family, what you're doing today, things like that.
Yeah. So I like to think of my time at Tesla was like being on a very fast roller coaster with spins, twists, and turns. And then when you get off the roller coaster, you're like, wow, was I really on that thing for that long? And yeah. And I mean that in the most positive way. I was challenged at Tesla in ways that one could never get challenged in school or and many other career opportunities, because it was an incredible place to solve problems that seemed impossible to solve.
Yeah, it was almost like a period of impossible asks, right? Yep. And tight timelines, make it happen. And then you guys would figure out how to make it happen.
I mean, I have so many stories of this where I was asked, because I was in charge of training for, the training of over 1,000 employees. And I'd have the VP or director, I should say, of sales come up to me and say, all right, Jay, we need to be able to train everybody on this new product. And we need that done by Monday. And when he told me that, it was Thursday. And stuff like that would come to me quite a bit. But it was like, okay, rather than freak out, and this is where my own work on myself really helped tremendously, it was, how do I assess my situation objectively to not get caught up in the story of it all, not get really taken aback by my emotions, to keep them in check while being able to solve this problem and to tap into people around me. And a lot of the things that I did on the work I did on myself over the years would enable me to be able to tackle a problem like that.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So how many years did you spend there?
So it was about 4 years there. Yeah.
That's a long tenure. I mean, to work in a dynamic, because that place changed so quickly each year, each quarter, in fact.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had so many shifts, so many changes in leadership, and with the constant outlook, uncertainty is something we all have to deal with. It's very natural. It's a part of just the organizations that we work for. And what I found was learning how to thrive in uncertainty and to be adaptable was a skill I had the opportunity to develop, and so many did and do within Tesla now and organizations like it.
Yeah, and it's really and that company is just, it's not a car company, right? Like it's a technology company. It's one that's developing so many different angles of artificial intelligence, robotics, environmentally sound policies. It's pretty remarkable.
Indeed.
So from there, let me ask you this. Why did you leave? Was that when tragedy struck, or did you go to SolarCity first?
No. So the storyline, it was before I even joined SolarCity, was when I had experienced a loss. It was when my father passed away, and it was sudden. It was unexpected. And
you were really close with your dad, kind of like I was with mine.
Yeah. And it really... and I know you know this, David, it creates a complete shift in how you see life and how you perceive time. And I realized that I did not have nearly as much time as I thought I did. I mean, my dad took my mother out to eat the night before at a restaurant. And then the next morning, that was it. And so I decided to make some changes then, because at that time I was working for a finance company. And then I shifted over to SolarCity, which was then later acquired by Tesla. And
gotcha. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. No worries. No. So it just created that major shift in me to start pursuing work that would give me a sense of fulfillment, satisfaction, and where I can really make an impact. I started to say, okay, how do I leverage my strengths, my unique talent, towards something bigger than myself? And I realized that first SolarCity and then Tesla, here's a vision that I can really align with. This is something that I really believe in. And so
something larger than yourself, right? Like you're aligning to something that has a cause and a mission and a meaning beyond just your own social, financial goals.
Right. Another way to say that, David, is beyond my own self-interest, right? Whatever I get from it, it's more of what am I going to give? How am I going to give? And then you ask me, why did I leave? Well, I realized that the time there at Tesla was done. The chapter was over. And I wanted to build something on my own, something where I can serve the world in a unique way that really makes a difference in people's lives. And in doing that, now the coaching that I do creates that kind of transformation in people's lives, where they go from a place of feeling very stuck, feeling very overworked, stressed, burnt out, not fulfilled, to I have a very clear path forward. I know what it is that I'm after, and I am content with the journey that I'm on to get there.
Well, and it sure is timely. I mean, in the last couple of years with the great resignation that we've seen in the marketplace, the statistics from the Labor Bureau support just never before seen
layers of people at all experience levels, shifting careers, changing industries. And while it might be exciting, there's a lot of stress and turmoil that occurs with change, right? Change is hard, right? It's as much as, I mean, in my industry, we drive change, right? And it's hard. It's hard. Yeah. It's the number one competitor that we have. It is not another technology or cybersecurity company or anything else. Like, it's really just, are people willing to change and challenge the status quo or not? Because there's great comfort in doing things the way we've always done them, right? People, we're creatures of habit. And so we like that security and that safety. So what do you say to people that are thinking of changing careers? You have this GAME methodology, G-A-M-E.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. And how did you, even more importantly than that, why did you develop it? Why did you align yourself to it? Even before, you know, let me start from the purpose and the reason for it.
Sure, sure. So when I was telling my story a little while ago about after my father passed and it changed my trajectory, I started to really invest in myself. So I invested in coaches, mentors, going to trainings, workshops, reading books, doing so much inner work on myself. And I realized that there were some commonalities in a lot of these teachings and in these approaches. And I realized what was really working for me. And I put it into the methodology that I now use within my coaching program. And that first step is really getting very clear on one's guiding principles. That is, sometimes that will be referred to as core values, but ultimately it's your North Star. What matters to you most? And that's unique to you. That can't be the same for everybody. So that's why this work needs to be done. You can't take anyone else's guiding principles. Yours comes from a lifetime of experiences and what you're, how you were raised and what's really made a difference in your life. So first getting clear on that North Star.
And then religion, culture, education, it's all, some people have different things driving them, right?
Right. And we, being conscious of what really does drive you and being conscious of what you really value helps you then to make appropriate decisions, because you can refer back to those guiding principles in whatever decision you need to make or however you wish to approach a situation. So the second aspect of the methodology is an assessment. We really want to look at not just your strengths and areas of opportunity, but what really lights you on fire. What do you do when time flies?
What inspires you?
What inspires you? What puts you into a flow state? All of these things we look at because we want to know not just what you're great at, because maybe what you're great at, you don't love doing, right?
Right.
Or maybe what you love doing, you're not great at. It could be, you have to look at both, right? So let's assess the whole thing here to be able to handle both of those things at the same time. And then following the assessment, we have the mission and the meaning of the work, because we are meaning making machines, David. We decide, we choose, we associate meaning to everything that we do. So we want to associate the positive meaning towards the mission that you're on, to recognize the kind of problems that only you can solve. And that helps you to align your career path and to a vision that, as we said before, is greater than yourself. And then E stands for execution. That is, of course, the action that one takes, because without action, we're just talking and it's just theory and it's just in our heads. But to make a real difference, we have to step out of our comfort zones and we have to come up with an action plan and take those steps in that direction.
So GAME, goals,
guiding principles,
assessment,
meaning and mission,
and then execution.
Yeah. Those are the four steps within the process that we have all of our clients go through.
So what are some of the ways that you've advised people in managing stress? And stress can be, you know, stress can be good. But when you exercise, your body's under stress, but the benefits are good, right? There's stress and, you know, I know that you're a fan of Simon Sinek and so am I. And I know that he talks about how, like in public speaking, he used to get really nervous, right? But then he recognized kind of, what is his body doing? Like, what is he feeling? Well, he's feeling this way, palms might be a little sweaty, might get a little dry throat. But when he's excited about something, and it's positive, right? It's the same biological thing. And so a lot of it is how you address and how you start to look at it. So you start to tell yourself, I'm really excited about this. I'm really excited about being able to speak publicly, as opposed to I'm so scared of it. And how do things like that play into, because when change happens, it causes stress. People can either look at it like, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this anymore. It's not like my habits are going to have to change. Or can they look at it with a positive angle and say, I get the opportunity to do this. I get the opportunity to expand and learn and grow.
Yeah, that's a really great way of putting it, David. And I alluded to this term, meaning-making machines. We are meaning-making machines. So the story you tell yourself about the situation, the circumstance, the stress, the feeling is ultimately what will determine how you respond to it and whether it's something that has a negative impact or a positive impact on you. So what I find, the research done by Aaliyah Crum, I think was pretty monumental and pretty significant. And while it's made its way around circles of people who talk about stress, I still think there's a lot of work to be done for everyone to really internalize this understanding and what she found in her research. And Kelly McGonigal has done a great job of this too. If you watch her TED Talk, and her book is The Upside to Stress, it is exactly aligned with what you just referred to and what Simon Sinek has talked about and some of the ways in which he approaches his own anxiety. Because in the end, it is a sensation in the body. And The first step is to be able to recognize the sensation for what it is. So many people, they struggle with this because even that first step is something they still need to put more practice into, which is to be self-observant, to be able to notice when your body is getting into that kind of state, to recognize it, to be able to slow it down. And so the practices that I provide my clients are in the under the umbrella of mindfulness, to be able to be mindful of your patterns, your reactions, your body, and even the thought process that is occurring as that instance or while as that circumstance is unfolding. So once you're able to recognize it, then you can become curious. So that's the second step. Become curious, be inquisitive. Okay,
so that's fascinating. So we were recently speaking with a behavioral psychologist, and she was talking about, we were talking in the context of social engineering and negotiation and sales, and how, you know, because that plays, social engineering plays into a large, inordinate amount of cybersecurity risk, right? And what they were saying is just what you're saying, is being able to pause and become mindful of how your body is reacting to this request to do something urgently that is against your interests. It's raising the amygdala, right? It's like amygdala hijack. It's that fight or flight feeling, yeah. Right? That it's the same feeling you get where cortisol levels rise and you can't think clearly. You can't recall things as well. You can't process things. If you can become mindful, become self-observant, calm down, then you're able to have the neocortex take over that has rational thought. And then you can say, this doesn't make sense. I really shouldn't act, even though my impulse is driving me to act.
Yeah.
In that moment in the cybersecurity realm, it's in that moment that data breaches occur, that people cause it. And if you can pause, you can alleviate and rationalize, because 100% of people that have caused a massive data breach look back later and go, I don't know why I did that. I wish I wouldn't have done that. Right. Yeah. And so if you can pause and develop the habit of being more mindful within that moment, we can see a change in some of these things.
Yeah.
I'm always trying to relate things to practical elements.
Well, the amygdala, the way you described what happens. I often refer to the amygdala as the jumpy superhero.
Yeah.
Coming in to try to save the day and right. protect you, even when there isn't a real threat. And so what you were describing, the prefrontal cortex, and how you can have a little bit more of that cognitive functioning to objectively look at, okay, what's really happening here before you take that or react the way you normally would, is an incredible value to have for yourself. And that's why I believe the practices of mindfulness and meditation are incredibly valuable, because we know, according to fMRI scans, what happens in the brain when people begin these practices and make them a part of their routines. We actually see decreases in the amygdala, the gray area that makes up the amygdala. We also see connections that get established between the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex for those who make mindfulness a practice day in and day out. So you ask me, how do you manage stress? Well, practices like these that are regular, that you make time for, are ways in which you can learn how to better relate to your stress, because stress is going to happen. But how are you relating to it? That's what really matters.
That's great. So, and that almost gets into, so are you, you're suggesting developing habits of practicing, like whenever I think of somebody wanting to change the way things have always been, right? To me, it's about habits. It's about, you can't just say, I'm going to lose 30 pounds. I'm going to the gym, going to do it. You show up for 8 hours. You're all excited. 2 weeks later, you're not doing it. Right.
Right.
But if you just get in the habit of every day at a certain time, changing your clothes and getting to the gym, even if you don't work out that day, but you still did that. You still, like James Clear talks about this in Atomic Habits, and such. Yeah. Just getting, developing the process every single day, right, of the little micro changes that over time, then all of a sudden you're still there. You're there every day. 3 out of the 5 days, you wind up working out, right? And then all of a sudden the next couple months, you're working out all 5 days. And then you're going for an hour rather than a half an hour. And then over time, all that happens. But what you're changing is the process. Yep. And then the weight comes off. You can't just aim for the goal. It's almost like money, right? You can't just work for the money. That's not the goal. It's a result, right? It's always a result. You have to focus on the meaning, and then and then you get good at it, and then the money comes.
Yeah, the activity itself, and something like a mindfulness practice, for example. I believe in what James Clear preaches and how to approach a new habit. Start small.
Right.
Just take that first step. If you've never meditated before, sit and meditate for 2 minutes. Put a little timer on and just start observing your breathing. Notice when you get distracted and come back to your breath.
What are your thoughts on some of the apps too? They have apps on your phone, and the phone is such a big distraction that the apps on the phone might help. I don't know.
So I think it depends on the person. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to that. I do think guided meditations and apps can be very useful for people. And there are so many people who have found great value in them. My personal approach to this is, if there is a need for that at the beginning for someone to really establish a practice, by all means, use it. But I do see it as a bit of a crutch, because in the reality of your life, you're not going to have your headphones on and be able to attach it to your phone and listen to that guided meditation throughout the day. You want to be able
to. When stress happens, you're not going to be able to plug in your headphones and, and pull it up, right? You need to, that's a good point.
So, like, for example, if you think about sport, right? You go to practice let's say basketball. You go to practice basketball, maybe at the very beginning, you know, you're just doing some drills and it's a little bit not as paced, but the real practice is you have to emulate the game. You have to play in an actual pickup game. And then you're like, okay, so now I know how to do this in the actual game. So my approach with meditation is the same way. I want people to graduate to a level to where they don't need the headphones. They can sit and meditate without the need of any guided voice in their head, because I want them to be able to put that into practice during the real game, during the real game of life.
That's good. So now what about, let me play devil's advocate. What about people that are like, come on, meditation. We're not going to like all get in a circle and sing kumbaya. Like I'm not living in a yurt, right? Like, you know, like this is modern society. Let's say they're not into meditation. There's still other forms, right? There's prayer. There's just silence. There's writing, journaling, right? There's a whole bunch of different ways you can still practice this mindfulness, isn't there?
I have two answers to that. The first one is an absolute yes to what you said. Prayer, even yoga, for some people, they prefer yoga, something with their body, journaling. Even there are some ways in which you can use art to be mindful, you know, drawing and using creativity. I think there's truth to that. What I find, though, David, and this is my second part of my answer, is that the people who say, oh, we're not going to go to a cave and just put our robes on and sit in a circle.
I just know they're out there. That's why I'm saying it. Right. Like, I know I'm going to hear this. So that's
right. So what I would say to them is they seem to have a deep misunderstanding of what is the actual practice of meditation and the kind of value that it can offer them. I like to equate meditation to being very similar to physical exercise. When you go to the gym, you are working out the muscles of your body. What are you doing to work out the most important asset that you have? And that that is meditation practice. It is not intended to make you feel good and just make you go into bliss. That's not the intention of meditation. What meditation is offering you is for you to be able to relate to your thoughts and emotions in the most effective and objective way. And that is of incredible value to anyone and everyone.
Yeah, that's really good. That's great insight, Jay. So Mark Mosier has joined us in the studio. Mark, how are you? When it comes to mindfulness or thoughts of therapy, like deep he's thought, the first.
Yeah, I was actually backstage meditating just now.
Yes, exactly right.
Mindful and aware just to come on and talk to you, Jay. Great to see you.
Oh, it's good to see you, Mark. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah.
So we have a couple comments from people on the live stream. I want to share them with you. And just get your thoughts. Self-awareness is very important to starting your mindfulness journey. That's a great point.
Absolutely.
And then Michael actually brings up even just breathing exercises, which you can do anytime, even while at work. That's a great point, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, breathing exercises, I encourage them with my clients, especially as very well put there by Michael, which is throughout the day, having pauses to be able to take some deep breaths. You can experiment with yourself and you'll find immediately this is true. The more deep breathing that you do and the more you slow down your breathing, you immediately feel calmer. Your body feels more relaxed. It's just the oxygen that you're bringing into your body is physically helpful. So I'm totally aligned with breathing exercises being another way to manage stress and manage anxiety.
Now, I can actually speak to that. So I seem to have a natural reaction to have adrenaline dumps, even when it's not a lot of anxiety or a lot of turmoil or chaos that I'm going through. I'll back to use breathing to bring my adrenaline levels down and just to kind of regain my footing, even because it could be something very small or minute that would trigger it, but I could feel it. I could feel my heart rate rise and my blood pressure go up and my breathing was getting short and rapid. And yep. I would use breathing exercises to bring to the ground, and it works, and I still use it to this day. So yeah, I'm big on the breathing exercises.
Yeah,
I still get adrenaline dumps all the time. I've just learned to better manage them now.
Well, and I think I still think it gets into that that amygdala hijack, right? I mean, it's common. It's in so many different aspects of our lives, personally and professionally. And it's when that happens, how do we deal with it? Or it's a panic attack or it's an anxiety attack that came out of nowhere, right? People that struggle with PTSD and things like that. Like, how do you, when you get that, how do you push through, realize that it's temporary and get to the point where your neocortex can take over and your rational thought can go back and then you can rationalize. It's very similar to like at night, right? You know, my mom used to say when I was a kid, like the monsters are always much bigger at night, right? And it was so true because I would, you know, I got in the habit of just having a notepad by my bed at night because I would wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning like, oh my gosh, I forgot to issue this or I forgot to do this. And these things seemed like such a big deal. I would just write them down so I would remember them. And then in the morning you look at it, you're like, yeah, no kidding. That's not a big deal. Like, because you're well rested, you're nourished, you're alert, and from what I'm learning is your neocortex has taken over here, right? Like, I'm rational. I know that we can handle this, and it's just a matter of just executing on it, right?
Very true. Yeah. And then another thing too is, you know, you mentioned at night, so it got me thinking about how we wind down in order to not get caught up in that trap of either overthinking or feeling stressed, and then it affects our sleep, which then affects our morning, and it just keeps going, right? So one of the things that I really encourage people to consider is to have a certain time in which they are shutting down all of their devices and not in front of screens, because what screens are doing and all that stimuli is creating more and more of that left brain thinking, that process is never stopping and never stopping. And so if you think of it like, you know, a wheel, right? If you keep spinning the wheel, it's going to keep going even when you get your finger off of it, because you've been spinning it and spinning it this whole time. You've right. been spinning it in what you're reading on your social media feed and all the
there's
stimuli that's hitting
behind
you.
Behind that too. Yeah. I know that there's science behind that, because with the blue light, you know, yep. the retina yep. and all that, you're on your iPad at night, and it just keeps your mind going, and it's harder right. to wind down. But in the same sense, so many people will play games at night or try and relax in doing that. So here they're trying to relax and they're doing it, but yet it's keeping their mind processing.
Exactly right. And so having that cutoff time for your devices and then having that wind down time where you're, let's say, journaling, maybe instead of right. on your iPad, you're reading or just having a conversation with your partner, whatever it is. And having that separation of stimuli over stimulus to just being able to wind down does wonders. And it will change your sleep pattern. If you've had that trouble with sleeping, have a more refreshed morning. And as I said, that cause effect relationship will just continue on throughout the day. You'll feel better and you'll be more productive.
Absolutely. That's absolutely wonderful. So what are some of the things, how are you getting this game methodology, GAME? How are you getting it out? What are some of the things you're doing? You're doing public speaking? Are you doing courses? Tell our listeners about it.
Yeah. So I'm very active on LinkedIn, and LinkedIn's been an incredible platform to be able to connect with people all over the world. And through LinkedIn, I've had the great honor of meeting a lot of people who are looking for some support in their careers, and they're feeling maybe a bit stuck, and they're feeling a little bit unsure of what their future looks like, or they have some challenges with being overworked, stressed, and anxious. And so they enroll in our coaching program. And our coaching program has yielded a great deal of results for people in the US, UK, Canada, Australia, South Africa.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm losing track of all the different countries we've been able to help people in. But you know, it's an online program, so we can reach anyone anywhere. And it's been very helpful. I mean, it really started when the pandemic hit, and we were really helping people. And
people were losing their minds, man.
People were losing their minds.
It was too much for everybody.
Yeah. And so it's evolved from there, and it's only grown. And it's something that has been an incredible honor for me to be able to help people like this and make a difference in their lives. So that's been the main cause. And of course, you know, being able to share it in places like this, platforms like this and other podcasts and things like that has been our other method of really getting the word out outside of our content on LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's absolutely wonderful, Jay. So, yeah. So tell me about what's your take on imposter syndrome? Because imposter syndrome is really, it's so prevalent in a lot of different fields, not just our field of cybersecurity, which is definitely one where it's very, very common. Because
it's very prevalent, yes.
Well, yeah, because people get put in leadership roles and they're like, I don't feel worthy. I'm like, because nobody can ever know everything, right? And no matter what you do, you could still get breached. And there's just so many different issues where somebody's going to feel like an imposter. And yet all this good work is getting done, all this great layers of protection and people, you're helping organizations. It's all good stuff. So how do you see this across all industries, not just ours?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You know, we all have a lot of data, and it has to positively, absolutely stay safe.
It can't get into the wrong hands, and the biggest challenge we have is how to transfer it from here to there. We all know as leaders that legacy tools that transfer our important files and sensitive data are mostly outdated and fall short on security, especially with the demands of today's remote workforce. Relying on outdated technology puts our organization's brand at risk, and that is unacceptable. So we're excited to invite you to step into the future of completely secured managed file transfer from our friends at Kiteworks. Kiteworks is absolutely, positively the most secure managed file platform on the market today. They've been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. And unlike traditional legacy systems with limited functionality, Kiteworks has unmatched software security with ongoing bounty programs and regular pen testing to minimize vulnerabilities. And the coolest part, they have easy-to-use one-click appliance updates you will love. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com to get started today. And now, the show.
Yeah, it's something that I don't think I've met anybody who hasn't had it.
That's great. Yeah. No, that's probably
that's
accurate.
A good insight, actually.
It's just different levels, or maybe their openness or vulnerability in sharing it. But when I get down to the core of it, everyone has it to some extent. And this doesn't matter if they're a CEO or they're an entry-level position. It doesn't matter. So what I find is that the common thing that people do in relation to imposter syndrome is they do one of three things. They either resist it. They try to fight themselves and say and suppress these feelings, these fears, and act like they're not there. And that is not a helpful way to deal with it. The second way is they distract themselves from those feelings, from those fears of being an imposter. And they distract themselves with anything else to get their mind off of that feeling and that sensation. And then the third thing that they do is they fuel it. It just amplifies and amplifies by thinking about it all the time and replaying it in their head over and over and over and over again. And I find that those three approaches, while the most common, are the least helpful. And so what I encourage my clients to do when it comes to imposter syndrome is to acknowledge it. It's there. It's real. And to be accepting of the fact that it is a natural response to wanting to be accepted in a tribe, essentially at our most primal level. That is really what that's about. We are fearful of rejection. We're fearful of being thrown out of the tribe, and we're going to be caught. Someone's going to notice that we're fake or whatever. We're not qualified.
Right. Yeah, it's that fear of being exposed, right?
Fear of being exposed.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah, and so
it's there's risk to having it. Like if you keep going down that rabbit hole of thinking and having all this self-doubt, it can be a dangerous thought process, because then you could be double questioning yourself before you act. It can get in the way of being productive. You can make the wrong decision because you're trying to be overly cautious. There's some risk with letting that self-doubt kind of take over. And then on the other hand, you don't want to have illusions of grandeur either. And be like, yeah, I got this. I must have been put here for the reason. And then you're just reckless.
That kind of arrogance won't get you that far either, right?
So exactly.
But David, I think what you're saying there is absolutely true. And the way to work with it is for you to be accepting of this natural response, and then to be curious about it, to be curious about what it really means, where is it really coming from. And also, one thing that I find incredibly helpful for me is to remind myself that even the people who have achieved the greatest heights, who have made however you want to term it, millions of dollars, or they got to these huge positions,
whatever the metric is for your level,
they've all experienced this. They all felt like, when are they going to find me out?
I
once read this quote by Mike Myers at the height of his career, when Austin Powers was coming out. Yep. He said, I kept wondering when the comedy police were going to come and take me away.
I've read that with a lot of performers. I've read that with a lot of performers. I think it's common with comedians too, because the work of stand-up comedy is just so. It's just the pinnacle of all of this, right? Like they just feel like they, because they're trying to invoke that level of oxytocin in your brain, and it's really, really, really poignant.
Yeah,
David, well, I think comment from the listeners there that are pretty good too.
Yeah, we have fear of not being good enough. That's absolutely true. Failure is not a bad thing. It's how you succeed.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and I would even say
all that is really good point. I mean, because really, when you think about it, it's timing, right? Like when you think of Thomas Edison, right? Who we all view as a successful inventor, right? Had failed so many times, kept showing over time after time after time, something that didn't work, something that would blow up, something that would cause a fire. Like, at what point do you go, dude, you're just a loser? Like, it didn't work, right? Or do you just let them keep going? And then eventually you get the light bulb and you get all these things that are just brilliant, brilliant inventions. Like, at what point do you cut the time off?
Yeah. Right? Well, I think that when it comes to, you know, that sense of being feeling like you're an imposter, it does relate to what we were discussing earlier about how you frame it all and what you can tell yourself about that feeling. And rather than that feeling of fear, that sensation coming up and the narrative being believed that you're not good enough, that other people are going to find you out. Instead, tell yourself, actually, this is my body preparing me for a really big challenge. It's getting me ready to be resilient in the face of adversity. It's going to help me to persevere in the same way Thomas Edison did towards something that is greater than myself. And if you can keep reframing, and you have to keep doing this over and over and over again, then imposter syndrome is not something that that you get stuck in. It's not something that has this grip on you. Instead, it is something that arises, you notice it, and then you reframe it over and over and over again.
That's great input, Jay. That's a really good insight. Reframing it. I'm going to use it, I'm sure, very soon.
Yeah. So, remind us again of GAME. What G-A-M-E, what does it stand for?
Guiding Principles.
The guiding principles, which is like your cause, your vision, why are you doing what you're doing?
Right, your core values, your North Star.
Core values, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The assessment of not only your strengths and areas of opportunity, but also what lights you on fire, what gives you that that sense of purpose, what do you do when time flies? Then M is meaning and mission. So I said before, we're a meaning-making machine. So what is the meaning that you're associating to this greater mission that you're on? And then E is execution, taking action, coming up with an action plan, and taking the steps to fulfill that mission.
And that will mean something different for every one of the clients, right? And that'll mean something different for every one of us, right? Absolutely. Because how we execute will depend on our circumstances and what our options are and who we've networked with and things like that, right? How we can execute on this.
It's a framework. And then the framework is adaptable to each person, whether you are in corporate or you're an entrepreneur, whether you're in X industry or Y industry, it doesn't matter.
That's phenomenal.
Sir. Yeah, that's really good stuff.
Hey man, thank you so much. I absolutely love talking to you. This will definitely not be the last time that we talk. We will be speaking again very soon. Oh, great insight as always, Jay Abbasi.
Yeah.
So we will have links to your information in the show notes as well. So please reach out to Jay and his team. They've got phenomenal ways of helping us all deal with modern stress, change, and imposter syndrome. So
I appreciate you
so much, man. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Mark. It was a pleasure.
Thanks. All right.
Take care, bud.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Hi, Cybercrime Junkies. Thanks for listening.
Got a question you want us to address on an episode? Reach out to us at cybercrimejunkies.com. We explore why cybercrime grows daily, how it is funded, productized, and organized, how to protect yourself, and where cybercrime goes to hide. And thanks for being a cybercrime junkie.